Blog Talk Radio.
Friday. I hope you had a great week. And as always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. Gmail, what is exciting? Hi, Rex. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. How about you?
You know what? There's no sense complaining. It's been a hell of a week, or a week from hell. I'm not sure which. But it's coming to an end, see? It was 7 days
ago
when I was
late. Well, you're still kicking, not in hell yet.
Yeah, right. So, it's just been a crazy week, and I'm kind of glad it's over with, and hopefully I can get back into the swing of things, because I was in the land of the missing all week, and, but I feel better, so that's a big plus. But yes. So we definitely have a nice board tonight, lots of goodies on it. Looks like it should be a lot of fun to get through. And I want to say hello to Pam. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
Hey, Dean. Hey, Rex. I'm doing good.
Thanks for asking. Life is good.
I'm glad to hear that. Absolutely. I am. So let's see. What do we have? I think we have like 20 poems on the board. And we've got a lot of audios, and, yeah, I think it'll be a good night. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, as I say, thank you, Pam, for holding the fort while I was MIA. I appreciated that very much. You know, somebody, it's a tough job that somebody's got to do.
No problem. I'm always happy to help, and I would help, you know, and I always like to think that, you know, if I was in such a position, there'd be people helping me, and you'd be number one in that line. So, you know,
I hope that be the case. You know, sometimes it's just screwy in my world. It seems like when it rains, it pours. If I was a turkey,
right?
I'd have drowned a long time ago. I'm telling you. It's amazing. Just amazing. But I do appreciate it, so I just want to make sure I said something. And let's see now. What else is new? I don't know. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. Lex put up a contest for next Wednesday. It's a Rex contest for a Wednesday, everybody. Woo-hoo! Yes, yes, yes. Everybody check it out. And,
awesome.
Right? What's shaking on Sunday, Lex?
That would be Metallica.
Ah,
your choice of songs for inspiration.
All right. Awesome sauce. That's a good one. Yes, I remember Pam and I were talking about that earlier today. It's just I get my late nights and Sundays, sometimes I get them mixed up, not knowing which contest we're talking about. So, you know, but I'm a little dizzy anyway, so it's all good. And let me see. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know. Who are the ones we're accountable for in the next couple of days, right? God. I can't keep my head on straight. But anyway. So it's Friday. So I guess I'll see who else is on the phone, and we can kind of get the party started, I guess. So hello, 270. How are you tonight?
How are you doing tonight? This is Wayne.
Doing fine, Wayne. How are you?
I'm hanging in there pretty good. Having a good time.
Yeah.
Gonna step up for a visit. Hey, you, Rick.
There you go.
Good to hear you, Wayne.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So, anyway, what's new, Wayne? Anything?
I'm about well, getting over my little accident I had, and so I'm feeling pretty good about life. So, can't complain too much. It was an intense month, is all I know. It was one intense month. It's over.
I believe that. Very good, very good. Well, I am glad to have you here, and it's good to have everybody here. And I guess we'll kick off the night here, Rex. I'm going to put up, we have a carryover from last Friday, so I'm going to start the night out with that. And this one is by Wichita Rick. It's called Dancing the Dance. So whenever you are ready.
All right. Dancing the Dance by Wichita Rick. Dancing the Dance. Hearing a little song breeds beginnings into bringing us up the parent. Tapping toes to and fro while hearing sound is just the start of unlocking hidden magic in your feet. Masculine or feminine, both have their ways. Who takes the lead, often left to chance. Music matters less for the listener and more for the needed beat. Get in step to make your day complete. Ring of fire to guide a buck dancer's step. Wisping in willows often better than pomp and circumstance. Folk, unfancy while foxtrot is footloose. Cutting a rug, fulfilling feelings from oh so deep. Swaying with the samba, the rest doing the rumba, sashaying the salsa takes on a hot romance. Cajun rhythms or wily waltzes, wanting to boogie-woogie will have them waiting in line like sheep. Twist and shout, leave no doubt, it is not square to let the legs levitate, so pick a partner, take a chance. Religious or rebellious, cha-cha in Charleston, country in Colorado, beginning from a barroom or ballroom, let the music lift you from your seat and into the street. And boom. And Wayne, why don't you stop, please?
this particular poem here, he's got quite a few dances. I was trying to count the dances he had in his poem. It's, he's got quite a few. I lost count. But it's a good poem, and he's we're with him, and good storyline. I like the dancing part, all the dancing in it. So, great job.
Thank you, Wayne. And Pam, how about you?
I really like this. It was, well, first of all, excellent read there, Rex. I like how he puts in the different types of music, the different types of dance, the Cajun rhythms, the Wiley waltzes, one of the boogie woogie will have them waiting in line like sheep, twist and shout, leave no doubt. You know, he mentions specific dances, and at the same time, this kind of works as a wonderful extended metaphor on, you know, on how we go through life and how we, you know, do we go like completely choreographed, or do we kind of just go in which way, like, you know, the whims go, you know. And I like masculine or feminine, both have their waves. He takes lead off and left to chance. Ring of fire to guide the buck dancer's step, wisping and willows often better than pomp and circumstance. You know, those lines have a very free spirit feel, a very open-minded feel to how we live life and how we embrace it. So excellent write and very well done.
Wow, thank you, Ben. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think this was a great piece. I thought there was a lot of fun to it and a great expression of all the different types of dances in there throughout. And I thought it was really an enjoyable piece. So thank you, Rick, for sharing with us. Absolutely.
Absolutely. This had me thinking of that song, Dancing in the Streets, originally done by Martha and the Vandellas way back when. But one that Van Halen featured on one of their albums, a great tune that brought it up to a little modern-day feel. So this kind of walks that very same tone because it hit that note on the very last line, let the music lift you from your seat and into the street. So, hey, you know what? The idea of dancing in the streets is better than warring in the streets. So get up and get out there and do something with them feet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, back on you.
Okay. Well, Pam, look, I know you're going to be upset, but I'm going to read this next one. It just feels like I should. And this is Haters Hate and Potatoes Potate by Casey Deck. Bury me. I grow. I am potato. And bone. Oh my god.
That was mighty funny there, Pam, since you're the one offering up the busted gut scene. Why don't you lead us off?
I don't know. Well, first of all, that the fact that Jean assigned it to herself cracks me up. It's not unexpected, but it cracks me up. There's something about a sad little potato that's funny, and you know, this is it has that kind of fun, silly, simple rhyme, you know, and I guess if, you know, it just amused me, but if I was to find a deeper meaning, I guess it would be like, you don't know what's going on underneath all the fluff. So, I don't know. It was fun. I liked it.
All right, man. Wayne, how about you?
Well, I said it's got great rhyme. You know, it's I grow a potato, so it's a very good name. I wish I had a potato right about now. And I can't decide which one I like the best. They're all really good. So I'm just going to say they're all just equal. Great, great poem. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you, Wayne. All right, Jean, you got to read it all 2, 4, 6, 7 words. Probably one of your children.
I'm stressed for something that long. You know, I love the lengthy poems. You know, just saying. And Pam, I'm really sorry. Don't be upset. I don't know. I thought this was funny. I thought it was cute. It was funny. I just read it short and sweet. I mean, what more can you say? It was. cracked me up. I got to say that. I have to say that. So nice work, Casey, and thanks for sharing.
It is funny because I like to double thought in that first word. Because bury means actually to have burrs, means prickly. So, and then the obvious end of that, bury. So I grow, I am potato. And I just thought on the eye, potatoes having multiplicity in eyes, so to speak, so that you grow more. Gives one a thought to burying the hate, so to speak. And hey, let me eyes grow.
Nice.
Again, all right, where would you like to go next?
Pam, can I get you to read the next one for us?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And this is My Mom, My Miracle by Sapphire Rose. Mom, 65 years ago, God planted a seed and granted my grandparents with the miracle that is you. I know through the years things were not always easy. You have survived so much. We both have. My mom, my miracle, I did not always defend you or protect you as I should have. That was because I was lost too, battered by life in general. There were many nights I cried, reflecting on the deafening silence of a past I wish I could change. I know to dwell on the past is futile. I do acknowledge the fact you are healthy, vibrant, and beautiful. You know, Mom, I'm not a religious person. In saying that, I am very much a spiritual one, and I give thanks every day for the miracle of you. There is no one on this earth I love more besides you, labored 24 hours drug-free to bring me into this world. That takes a strength I cannot comprehend. And I want to thank you for being my strength, my salvation, a shoulder to cry on. You've kept my secrets, the dark ones that sit in your archives right next to you. That is a comfort knowing your mom is also my very best friend. Mom, you are a miracle. Never doubt that. The reason you survived that Halloween night back in 1971, and I know you question it, don't. Some things are just not meant for us to know. So command each day, draw in a deep breath and turn your face to the sun and smile. And thank Spirit for your health and every vibrant beat of your heart. I do. Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. And thanks.
Nice read, Pam. And happy birthday.
Thank you much. All right, Jean, we're going to start with you.
You know, I said this is a beautiful tribute poem to her mom. Sapphire, it was just really wonderful, and I'm sure you shared this. And if you didn't, you better do it. But I think it was just beautifully written, and what a great thanks to your mom. You know, I think that sometimes that gets missed or forgotten, or life takes its tolls and things don't get said. But I'm glad that you took the opportunity to put it all out there for her and to say, you know, exactly how you felt and you know, what you meant. Beautiful job. Beautiful job. And happy birthday again. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. And Wayne, how about you?
I don't know if Wayne's back yet. He said he had to step away.
Okay. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. Happy birthday to her mom. I'm not sure exactly when it was, but, you know, happy birthday. And I love here that she lets us know to her that her mom is a blessing, a miracle. You know, someone, and the fact that they have both been through difficult times and been made stronger in the process. Just a strong emotive right all the way through. You can definitely, even before she gets to happy birthday, Mom, I love you, before it's stated, you know, you can feel the love in this. You can feel the admiration. And so just a beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. Yeah, it's very much mixed flavor of life shared from birth to now, so to speak. And it does include a couple of other thoughts. You, well, I guess 1971, something happened in it. But there's a note, you don't have, some things are not meant for us now. This is no explanation necessary. It's just a note to something that did occur and still managed to walk past that and survive. So the idea is on the survival angle. And even though there was, at times, mothers and daughters are at odds with each other, they don't often sit on the very same page, and they don't actually listen when they get to a certain age, just like the boys do. And things occur. And even though there are good times, there are bad times, there is still, that's just a kind of a brief mention, because everything else in this pours out the thought of deep feelings for mom. So it's on that level that this is quite the happy birthday piece.
Mm-hmm.
We're back at the...
Awesome. So, Swainy, back yet? Well, I guess that brings it back to you, Rex.
All right.
So here we put this piece up by Dan Deschino.
Okie dokie. Breath in a Hurricane by Daniel Deschino. I am a pebble in pavement, nothing more. A small, forgettable piece in the veins of modern society. Uncounted among countless, replaceable and buried at weather whimsy. I once had dreams of fame as a damaging pothole to demand attention, but I think it's best to just help the cars on their journey safe and comfortable. Many have children destined to build highways. I hope to look up one day and see them in the stars. I am a pebble in pavement, nothing more. And poem. All right, Pam, you got first look.
Okie dokie. Well, first of all, great read. Always good to see a write by Daniel. I am a pebble in pavement, nothing more, a small, forgettable piece. You know, it's interesting how there's a sense of humility in realizing you're a pebble in the pavement. You know, and it's interesting to me because, you know, is it humility or is it being so beaten into the ground, you know, that you've lost any sense of hope of becoming any more than a pebble? I once had dreams of fame as a damaging pothole to demand attention, but I think it's best to just help the cars on their journey safe and uncomfortable. I like those lines. I like those lines in the sudden realization of having a purpose of, you know, and there's just, and I do like also where he mentions of children, that many have children destined to build highways. But to me, when he mentions children, it's not what he obviously states, but the idea of how children love to pick up pebbles, love to pick up stones and give them as gifts. And so, you know, there's this whole realization of just how much of a gift you can be when you're a small piece of a bigger puzzle. And excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you very much, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Yeah, I think that this is a great piece by Dan, but that's nothing unusual. It was really great. I definitely, I read that it was for a contest on humility, and I went, okay, I can see this. You know, something so simple as a pebble in the pavement, it doesn't sound like much. But each pebble has its worth because each pebble creates something. that keeps things running smoothly. It's a foundation kind of thing. And with that one pebble, all of a sudden it wears down and it speaks of a pothole. I mean, it's just, I know I didn't put that in the best of ways, but I think that really is what my thought is on it. Humility is just not saying, oh, well, you know, it's all about me and the way things work for me. I do this and I do it. You know, sometimes you have to step back and go, you know, I might do something here, but it's not all about me, and I'm not the only thing that makes it happen. You know, collectively, we can all make a lot of things happen. So, I don't know. I think it was just a really well done and expressed piece. So, great job.
Well, thank you, Jean. I think the greater metaphor was the underlying need. And, hey, you might not end up famous, worth a lot of money, and have accolades out the wazoo, but like you said, everybody has their that set note in the world itself, whether that be the guy who fixes the cars, the guy who fills the potholes, the one who does the electrical work when you got something broken, the AC man. It doesn't matter. There are many other positions outside of those being on the high-end side that need to be fulfilled by those who have the hands and the mind to do it. And I think that's the idea here is you might just be a pebble, but without you, that road doesn't hold itself together. That's the general idea. You're more than you think you were.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm
going to
talk to you.
Okay. Well, I want to welcome Laurent to the show. Hello, Laurent. Welcome aboard.
Good evening.
Hey, Laurent.
Did you happen to hear Dan?
I read it. And I listened to what Rex had to say. As a matter of fact, I listened to your analysis, and I've got to agree with you. How many parents haven't felt like a pebble under their children's shoes at one point or another? In the second stanza, he uses the word whimsy. This poem is filled with a tender whimsy to postulate oneself as a pebble with a wish to be a pothole. Has got to bring a smile to your face. Deep down, guys at the right of it, you have to be there doing your part, and if it's only that of a pebble, you'll hope for more in the future.
There you go. Okay, nice combo. Okay, well, since you're the new kid on the block, Laurent, nice one's up for you. This is by Joseph Noon. Call home again.
Okay. Home again. At twilight, beneath the tall blue pine, I sit with cigar and Cabernet wine. The voyeur moon eyes waft my poetic memory, so magic becomes magnified. My soul glows like an eternal fire. The nightingales are like a celestial choir. Music itself could not murder my spirit. Tonight, it has magic virtues in it. As if a kindness that will nerve me, a garden I used to greet, for now my love is lightened. And
great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, you want to kick it off?
Sure. This is a wonderful piece by Joseph. I love the image that he chose for this, or that chose him for this poem. I'm not sure which way it goes. You know, we never know what comes first. But I think it was just beautifully done. Wonderful, wonderful imagery throughout. And it definitely, I think, is a great compliment to the image. And Joseph, I was wondering where you were. I was just talking about you this past week, and here you are. You must have heard me. Your ears must have been burning. But it's good to have you work back on the board. And great piece. Very much enjoyed. Absolutely. Beautiful.
Thank you. Pam, how about you?
So this is beautiful. I have to agree with Jean that it is great to see a write by Joseph. He always has such a classical feel to his write. I love the phrase, the voyeur moon with her eyes wide, the idea that the moon, that a higher power, like, is looking down on you. Zeus himself cannot murder mine spirit. I think what, to me, this, you know, because it says, her garden where I used to grieve, where now my love is lain, there's a sense of losing someone that you loved. And I almost imagine the idea of their ashes scattered in the garden. And rather than making the memories grief, it's that whole idea of sitting back and making those memories something that moves the spirit. So beautifully written and very well done.
Nice catch there, Pam. Thank you very much. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Sorry, I'm almost drifting there for a minute. Let me get back to the poem. I beg your pardon. The image really sets the mood. Although we do begin with a tall pine instead of cherry blossom, but the effect is the same. Sitting with a cigar and Cabernet wine and the voyeur moon watching you. Memories, an environment like that, when you're thinking about someone or something, tonight, it's the magic of the moment, despite the fact that he grieves where his love is lain. That is beautifully written.
Absolutely, it is. And I got to agree, it does hit on that note of, say, bringing the ashes home, returning the heart to where it beats the most within that that garden itself, and a place where he grieved or used to grieve. I like the thought up front. I should get sit with a cigar and Cabernet wine, the voyeur moon with her eyes wide, my poetic memories so magique become magnified. There is a nice tone of being complete once more, knowing that she is there and he is doing what they once did before, sitting there enjoying that that yard, that garden, that evening. And now it's there to be enjoyed once more. Nicely done, Joseph. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Well, the next thing about on the board is Never Sleep Again, Sleeping Beauty. By We Are All Gonzo. Part 5. Everybody. I don't know how many pieces there are to this, but this is part 5. So let me put it on, and here we go.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I could do things my way?
Alone in the forever woods, made of stone and heavier goods, his clever dome home, brightly lit, brilliantly shone. Residence of a former scruff, witty, nimble, with not enough food on his plate, so to compensate, he had an overwhelming desire for stuff. At first understood and even admired, until greed took hold, becoming Jack's stronger desire. After struggling through the loss of his mother, he decided no longer he would feel want like another. Inside the shack lay a rather fat goose, overfed with loose tacks, so he could produce golden eggs by the pack. But if it refused, Jack would rack his neck with a noose. Each golden gift the roosting goose left slid a rift between Jack and his royal, loyal pet. At first gentle was the boy with his pleas, bended knee begging he would bow to the swan, but the relationship crippled as time rippled on. Gathering wealth to hoard for himself, he entrapped the quacking rat with no slack to his shelf. Now, with surging prod, the goose itself struggles on, finding no more wishing for Jack to change his ways, just wishing for a single moment outside of its cage.
Well, now I think I reckon it's about time to give me the good stuff, darling. Papa needs an advance on that paycheck. Don't make me use something worse. And quit sounding like a chicken. You're a goose. I hate that.
Jack shoved the cattle prod toward the fowl's jaws. It rattled and cawed. Pure agony for the battered bird, treated like refuse, needed an abuse, is how it lived to serve its absurd recluse, not quite the life deserved. Steps ever slick, creeped outside, quick and nimble, tips gripped a ledge while eyes pried. Each night, Goosey Goose would pray to get loose, but by instinct he cawed when a spine sleepy he saw. Jack gripped the bird like an AK, a pair of wings and a pair of feet in each hand, quite the display, staring eye to eye with the goose while the gooses faced the opposite way. Sleepy burst through the archway. Jack cocked the bird, its head and stomach compressed, expelling, taking a golden egg to her chest. It felt like her lungs had went into a rest as her breast and the rest dropped thoughtlessly through her vest.
Well, well, well. I've been waiting for you ever since I heard you escape the castle. Pretty little thing like you took one whole week to get to Maine. I'm disappointed. I figured I'd be higher on your list.
Sleepy coughed, ruby red gripping the cloak over her bruised bones as the mirror glared and stared from a window all alone. Jack grabbed Sleepy by the hair and dragged her down the stairs to the outside and then slammed her down on the ground with his might. He reached into his pocket, pulling out something green, and began littering the area with magical beans.
Now watch this.
Jack stood back and spat before her feet when Sleepy found herself at the peak of the 20-foot tree.
Ain't that a sight? These things are damn right magical. Thanks to that goose inside, I can afford a never-ending supply.
She eyed the wide 3-gallon bucket of water overflowing.
I think you know where this is going. Oh, by the way, say hi to the giant up there. You know, before he rips you to shreds.
Splashing around as roots crashed through the ground, propelling the mound of leafy mass high in the sky. Sleepy found a vine held on for dear life as the stalk swayed side to side and began to petrify. It bent and slammed against an invisible brace, quite loud, a puffy masquerade designed to shroud the location of something both terrifying and beautiful. Sleepy dared to take a step, not knowing where the footings be next. She stood in front of the castle, silent, preparing to battle the hair-raising giant, pearlescent luminescence. The ivory tower stood proud, camouflaged within the mounds of fluffy clouds. Tales from past were told of creatures falling cold to the unforgiving ground, soundly crushed by rage uncontrolled. Tossed down from the blue yonder, leaving a reminder of somber times ended, lost lives ran back, turning into the dust of old. Many armies lay siege to the sky domain, yet its single king remained one and the same. Despite the trebuchets that tossed flaming death towards the sun, never came the day of the giant's reign undone. A creature beyond compare, dangerously skillful and violent. For the first time in many years, Sleepy's hands shook no matter how hard she tried to hide it. With her last ounce of courage and also her sanity, she rushed the broad gates, preparing for a costly calamity. The stress was nothing new, that fear and uncertainty she knew too well. What's left to do but progress through, when your surrounding view is already hell?
Gonzo, thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, as always, just a stellar performance. I love the background noises, the sounds, like the crowing rooster and the chickens and the geese. I like that he went into Jack and the Beanstalk. The interaction, the relationship and the interaction between Sleepy and Jack very much reminded me of Scarlett O'Hara and Rhett Butler from Gone with the Wind. There was that whole kind of like that love-hate thing, like where he put her in her place and, you know, so, and there was a great humor in that. I really liked that. And, you know, I like the dark humor. Many armies lay siege to the sky domain. It is a single king remained out in the same, despite the Puget, that tossed flaming death towards the sun, never came the day of the giant's reign undone. I like how he takes the whole idea of bringing down the giant, instead of having the giant simply fall, it becomes this battle. I mean, this is just entertaining all the way through. I did like the mention of the goose. Now a surging prod, the goose itself struggling, finding no more wishing for Jack to change his ways. You know, I like that he touches on that whole idea that even the goose has started giving up on Jack. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And I guess your thought is, frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
Exactly.
Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought this was another great piece. You know, I thought it was another great production by Gonzo. He does such nice work with these. I don't know what his trick is, but he definitely pulls them together. I thought it was a clever pulling together of all the different fairy tales and piecing them back together, creating such intriguing work. And that's really what it is. It's very intriguing because you don't know where he's coming from because it's not the standard, you know? He's taking his pieces and he's tossing them in the air and he's catching them and putting them all back together in his own unique way. So I think it was a great job, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely, Gonzo. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Dean. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, sometimes I think Gonzo's stuff is the Mad Magazine equipment. I find this skillful, creative work wonderfully bizarre.
Oh, absolutely. I like that middle section here. Jack grabbed the bird like an AK. A pair of wings and a pair of feet in each hand. Quite the display. Staring eye to eye with the goose while the goose's ass faced the opposite way. And then the sort of Jack tossed the bird, head and stomach compressed, expelling. Taking a golden egg to her chest, it felt like her lungs had went into a rest as her breast and the rest sobbed thoughtlessly through her vest. He runs on with the alliterative rhyming throughout, which kind of enhances the storyline a bit. Plus the sort of taking opposite ends of the spectrum in the childhood tales, where you got Sleepy and Red Riding Hood. You got the wolf in the first one. Now you got Jack and the Beanstalk and Sleepy. I was making the rounds through this fractured fairy tale world and offering up a different little paint on the edge of making it almost a sort to act story time, which I like. Thank you, Gonzo. All right, Jane, back on you.
Thank you, Doc. Pam, I have the next one for you, if you don't mind. So there we go.
I don't mind at all.
Very cool.
All right. You Are Unique by SSM. And did the SoundCloud not work?
Oh, God, I don't know. Do we have a SoundCloud? Sorry. My bad. Oops. I want to know how you're reading the first line of the poem and you find the SoundCloud at the bottom. What is that, Pam? Good Lord, I can see you in the head a little bit.
That's because my eyes bounce up and down.
Is that what it is? I don't want to know anymore. Tell me no more. Here we go. I've got to put it up now.
You are unique. Don't consider yourself weak, molded in God's image. You are unique. If you ever decide to, you can make the sky nail, can make the impossible possible. Your spirit has the steel. In life's onward march, you are your only torch. You are your only weapon against every scourge. Not a leaf to go with the wind, you are the storm that roars. Not a boat to float the wave, you are the tsunami erasing the shore. Fixed by the stars, such is not your life's course. Create your own universe, you are the nature's force.
Great read, SSM. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And, Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
There's an awful lot of love in this piece that celebrates the individuality and uniqueness of individuals. She uses words that really bolster the spirit. You can make the sky kneel, the impossible possible. Your spirit has such steel. You are your only weapon against every scourge, especially like not a leaf to go with the wind. You are the storm that roars, not a boat to float the waves. You are the tsunami erasing the shore. That's finely phrased. This is so nice.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mark. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. I really like how it's an uplifting rite, not just written. Well, she might have written it for one person, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels like anybody could read this and take heart in it. And your spirit has such steel in life's onward march. You are your only torch. You are your only weapon against every scourge. It's a real celebration of individuality, as Lauren said, and it's also the idea of that inner strength that each person has, and that the inner strength that you need to depend on, because it'll always be there for you. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you? I didn't throw you under the bus.
No, I threw myself under the bus. I believe it. First time I've muted and first time I've screwed up. All at once. But I think this is a lovely piece by SSM. I really did. I thought it was beautifully penned, and I think the emotions in it were well expressed. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just a really lovely piece.
Yes. Well, absolutely. I like the underlying notes in this, the thought of self-reliance and the note to, you don't depend on anybody else. It is you who needs to stand tall and deliver, so to speak. You have it in you. Make the effort. Grow with each mistake. You might fall down. But you know what? Get up again and do something else. Path is onwards and upwards. And it is your name. No one else. Thank you, SSM. All right, Jane.
Okay. Now, Wayne, since you're back, I'm going to give you this next poem by
Jack
Wayne's Thompson.
Back? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yes, he said it in the room, so I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm
Hi,
here.
Wayne.
Hi, I'm coming about the last poem before I read it. That's okay.
Okay.
This last poem was a very philosophical poem. It had a lot of good advice about one's life journey. It's a very positive message and well written. Something should be read a daily for a spiritual review throughout the day. There's very a lot of insight in this poem. I liked it a whole lot. I like philosophical poems.
Absolutely. Okay, Wayne, I put the next poem up for you by Jack Tompkins.
All right, let me see if I can find it real quick here. Here it is. So this poem is by Jack. It's called Pain Magnets, and it goes like this. Just read about a family of refugees fled to Afghanistan only to relocate in Ukraine. So rehearsing for jobs 2.2.0, ready with Red Tail again. Man, this is messing with my head and my gut. You hit the slow gin again, the purple bottle made from the fruit of the garden, fruit of no tree, wink, wink. Apples don't grow. In Iraq, there's creamy figs by the thousands. And that hidden slow gin bush with berries so blue, they blow the vine. Yes, my arms are too short to box with you, but I swear, big guy, if you find you're messing with, folks, just for a laugh, just for kicks, I'm flying up.
Great read, Wayne. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, you're going to ask whether you got a response or not. It's another thing entirely. I'm glad to see this piece. I really was a family. I'm glad that you relocate from Ukraine. So you leave one, you end up in the other. And where does that leave you? Life is no fun. Inventive piece, I like it.
Thank you, Ralph. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I think that this is a tale well told by Jack. Definitely nicely penned. And, you know, I want to thank him for sharing with us, as he always does. His imagery throughout this is just pretty incredible. You know, between the where the heck was it? Gosh, I just saw it. I don't know, the berries are blue, you know, so blue, they blew the vine. I don't know, I feel a touch of humor in here, you know. But I think if he's trying to put these images out here and just kind of, I don't know, trying to pretty much embellish these images and make them into something totally different. And I think it was pretty clever and nicely done.
Thank you, Jean. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is an intriguing write, really thought-provoking. I like how he starts out with, just read about a family of refugees fled Afghanistan, only to relocate to Ukraine. I really think that it's really cool the way he sets this up with that straightforward language, and then starts going into metaphors and starts taking us along in the journey. And you hitting the slow gin again, that purple bottle made from the fruit of the garden, fruit of the no-no tree, wink, wink. You know, there is a sense of humor in this, and there's, you know, there's the whole idea of wondering where your own thoughts come from, how they lead from one crazy thought to the next. And there's also that idea, to me anyways, that, you know, that no matter where you go, you're going to find that forbidden fruit, that there's always going to be something that people are going to say, no, you can't do this, you can't eat that. The end, It is humorous, the whole idea of this short person jumping up with these high-flying kicks. But there's also this whole idea, you know, that of wanting to stand up for people who are taking the worst of life, who seem to be getting it worse than any other people, who seem to be almost like their suffering seems to be ignored, and the want to stand up for those kind of people. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Wayne, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I said it was a little humor, a little sarcasm, and a little scary with the stereotypes thrown out. It's well thought out and makes me want to Fig Newton. Great job. But I swear, big guy, if... And that's where he ended it. It's a good poem. He did a good job. I thought a lot of that boy, and I liked it. It's a good poem.
Thank you, Wayne. Yes, it is funny because I think that first stanza was just a lead-in. So, rehearsing for job 2.0, betting with Red Tail again, and then the thoughts, the conversational tone actually works in this. You hitting the slow gin again, the fruit of the garden, fruit of the no-no tree. Apples don't grow in Iraq, just creamy figs by the thousands. The slow gin. And then there's the thought, my arms are too short to box with you. He's actually having a conversation with God in the moment because it kind of looks like, hey, you're just messing with us for kicks, you know, I'll come up there and kick your buns. Even though you're a lot bigger than me, you might want to actually start taking care of people, so to speak. Back to you, Gene.
Okey-dokey. Well, Laurent, that brings me to you again. So I'll put this piece up by our friend, Fueta de Capra. So whenever you are ready, that would be great.
Book.
What?
I was in the library to borrow a book. I leave and I have to look. The librarian was surprised. She dropped her pen. Standing on the counter was a fat old pen. Book. And the sound from her beak. I was amazed. And the lady could not even speak. It was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen, that's for sure. She passed, took the book, and it went out the door. 5 minutes later, the library door opened again. Once again, I walked in. At the saddle. Book, said the hen, repeating itself. It's the librarian. Another across the shelf. Old hen ran off again. With all feathers in her. Face in the street. Singed his leg. I stood there in amazement at what I just saw. The face of the librarian. A look of shock and awe. Blow me down. That hen came back a third time. Couldn't help but notice on his feet was some slime. Bah, said the chook, the librarian again. It was then that I decided to follow our second friend. Followed her from the fox and down the street. Then she turned off towards a weedy creek. Suddenly, she stopped right next to some jagged rock. Mud was everywhere on the shoes and socks. Not what it seemed. I could be hit by the log. Heard bug, and he was talking to a frog. Hardly believe what happened next. I'll never forget it. She handed the book to the frog. He said, "Read it.
Great. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, why don't you lead us off?
I think this was a good write by Poeta. You know, this is definitely you know, a great touch of humor throughout. Excuse me. And I think that this was written for a contest, Image Pump, children poem, fiction fantasy. And I think that it really suited that very well. It had that great bit of childish humor throughout, you know. I love the hen, though. Or, you know, and then you get down to the darn frog and said, read it. I was like, oh, my God. But it was a good tale told, and I think he did a nice job with it. But Poet is great with his humor, so this one is just totally different direction than I'm used to from him. So, excellent job, Poeta, and thanks for sharing with us. Yeah. His ears must have been ringing, too. You know how it is.
Thank you, Gene. Wayne, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good poem. I was a great ending. I didn't even see the ending coming. He said, read it. As a good way to end the poem. It's just a funny poem. Wonderful storyline, nice humor. Good job. I liked it a whole lot.
Thank you, Wayne. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this was enjoyable. I like that he took the joke and expanded it, like really added to it with, first of all, great rhyme and flow, wonderful attention to detail. And I like that he tells it from the person who is watching these events all unfold. So just very, very clever and very well done.
Absolutely.
Nice to say, Pam. Thank you. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, that is very skillful in this particular piece. It creates a sense of merriment, a sense of wonderment, indeed a sense of tension with his feral hen. Some comes in looking for a book. And he continues that tension all the way through with repeated action of the hen, the amazement of the two in the library, following the hen, begins to unravel the ending. But like any skillful author or joke teller, he waits until the last moment that he'll relieve the tension, with a punchline ready, which is exactly what you need to do with things like this. It's very well crafted.
I think it's a clever tale, and it hits on that note of what children's books is to be about. It's supposed to be about fun. It's supposed to be about learning. It's supposed to be about imagination, and with a little touch of moral to it, the thought of the hen going back to the library again and again. It's on that note, hey, you know what? Reading is fun, and it's the finishing note, read it from the frog, offers up that very same flavor. You learn by reading, and the idea is imagination from those little ones. So, nicely done, Poeta. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
All right. Well, that kicks me back to you, Rex. And I have one here by Francis. So, whenever you're ready. Well, whenever it shows up. There you go.
Better Than Crystal by C. Francis Higgins. Better than crystal, the verses on your fingers dance, leap, and stretch, offering melodies that chase charnel thoughts away. Behind raveled hair, the expression on your face, passionless and wayward, drives a cadence that summons uncertain spirit here. Here where the keys take from us in hexagonal rooms, everything we can give, spared the deep song of the shatter, reports the earthy, the rot. Better than the wind that whispers with harmonies through broken, tattered curtains, gossamer and spectral, is this silver voice that lightly sings under starving orange lamplight to me and the others as we lie resplendent in empty, dirty ballroom. And better is the soul who throws himself into impossible gardens and the dense music which only obsession affords. And follow. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Well, wonderful read there, Rex. I think this is just absolutely one of the most beautiful and perfect descriptions I've heard of someone playing the piano. Better than crystal, the verses on your fingers dance, leap, and stretch. There's a real great imagery in how the fingers constantly have to be moving in different directions and be fully immersed into the piano keys. Better than the wind that whispers with harmonies through broken tattered curtains, gossamer and spectral in this silver voice that lightly sings under starving orange lamplight to me the others as we lie resplendent in empty, dirty ballrooms. There's such a haunting feel to this, as if this whole thing is being spoken by almost like a ghost who once was, you know, a part of that ballroom, a part of that high society scene of you know, gatherings where music was played on the piano and people sang, and you know, there's nothing left but that whole idea of that dream of people who once gathered around this instrument of music and joy. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Dan. And Laurent, how about you?
such a fitting tribute to, what is it, the most complex musical instrument that we have, I believe, the piano. To be able to summon words that our friends and friends summon at will, almost like musical notes, popping out of thin air. I gotta agree with Pam. I'll simply say that last stanza, and better is the soul who throws himself into impossible gardens and the dense music which only obsession affords is mightily well crafted and speaks to the exact frame of mind that the kind of transcendent moment that occurs during a magical performance.
Thank you, Rob. Jean, how about you?
You know, I think that this was just a wonderfully penned piece. I thought it was great imagery throughout, an excellent reflection between that image that he used for this piece and the words. You know, whichever came first, it doesn't matter, because either way, they complement each other so well. He doesn't have down here that there was a prompt or anything, so I'm not sure. You know, sometimes you just get lucky and find that image. The two-third piece, which is wonderful. But I think you did a wonderful job with this. Really, really well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Wayne, how about you?
I think it is a very good point. I like the way, he's got to talk about piano. A piano been playing really, really well, but it's, to me, it seems like he's in a room and he's looking back and reminiscing about the way it used to be in the ballroom days. And in this poem, he does the last two lines of every stanza just ends the stanza perfectly. He starts with offering and drives and spares and shatters and tatters. And just every stanza ends is just perfect. It's a great job of writing he did. And it's just, he ends each stanza with an emotion that's very good. Just makes it really good. Great job.
Thank you very much, Wayne. There is that note of death in that first stanza, and he runs with that thought, the charnel thoughts away, drives a cadence that summons uncertain spirits here, spares the deep song to shatter, deports the earthly to rot. Through broken, tattered curtains, gossamer and spectral voice, this silver voice, the empty, dirty ballrooms. There is a note to how music comports itself to many an arena, and even in deserted, as this picture offers up, deserted, run down, there is still that tone of magic and music that still kind of sings in the moment from these walls where once many things would have many parties, many audiences would have come to sit and listen to the beauty that came out of that piano and the man behind the keys itself. So I like this different piece. I like it. Thank you, Steve Francis. All right, Gene. Well, back up to you.
Loki. Well, for my next episode, I'm going to put up a piece by Diane Z. Yes, I am. Okay, I was making sure I wasn't on you. There we go. It's a piece up. And I have an audio for this. Because if I don't do that, Pam will jump. I have an audio. Thanks, Sam. Here we go.
Feeling Orange by Diane D. I wear myself invisible in this secondary skin. I lurk inside a rainbow where I never do fit in. Riding on ruby coattails like a daylily's inner core. Today I'm floggy yellow, which petals much abhor. Wrapped by ragged sobs, roof tore my pit in sunder. Dappled in rinds of oats, when I peel off the umber, yielding a tang of frosty, like a smashed dead leaf. flitting like a blue bottom, flaming a marigold's grief. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, this is very clever. First of all, wonderful rhyme here. I like that she takes the reds and yellows and mixes them together to create the orange. Riding on ruby coattails like a daylily's inner core, today I am plagued with yellow, which petals much of whore. I like that she gives us the idea of that you, instead of using the color orange to represent something bright, something joyful, she shows us how it can represent grief, how it can represent that sadness. You know, and I think she chose a great picture of the molding orange to go with that whole idea. I also really liked dappled in rinds of oats when I peel off the umber. There's something about the idea of peeling away the pain to find the growth underneath. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Wayne, how about you?
There's a lot of metaphors that can be worked in this poem, but the way she wrote it, it's just great the way she wrote it and all the different descriptions she had of herself being past her better days, it looks like. And but she's not giving up at the end of it. She's getting a tangy and frosty. She's still fighting for it and going for it. And it's a great poem. It's very colorful and very tasty, really. Great job.
Thank you, Wayne. All right, Jean, what are you thinking?
Thinking? Yes, I do that occasionally. I thought it was nicely penned, and I think it was a great use of color and imagery throughout the whole piece. And I wish her luck in the contest, because that's a Kevin contest, and they're kind of rough. There's so many entries usually, but definitely it's a good contender in that. Great job, Diane. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
It starts off with a description, really of an alternate personality, a second skin, which she wears invisible, where she lurks inside a rainbow. But, of course, nothing to show those colors. But today I'm plaguey yellow. She petals much of a whore. You know, she manipulates the colors. She'll move very skillfully. You know, riding under the coattails, maybe the color of a daylily's inner core today, that vague yellow. Now, I got to ask, is Ruth also a synonym for mercy?
I don't know.
For some reason, that seems to be suggesting itself to me. Ruth tore my pit in thunder, dappled in rinds of oats, when I peel off the umber. A lot of brain fog on my part regarding this poem, but I do sense an underlayment of strong grief, which ends up coloring her visible, at least to some point.
Oh, nice catch with that, Ruth. I hadn't quite thought of that angle, but you're right. It does hit on the thoughts of grief just as well as with that Sowski in the last stanza, stale, warm, and kind of stuffy atmosphere, like a smashed dead leaf. That was a nice turn of phrase like that. Sitting from a blue bottom, gleaming a marigold leaf. I like the, again, right back to the orange and the yellows to explain the thought of that orange, which does have quite the blemish on it. It does offer up the note of how one feels in the moment and its description therein. Nicely done, Diane. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Okay. My next magic trick, I'm going to put up, excuse me, a piece by Mr. M. That also has an audio. So here we go.
This is my recital of Fade. Slowly creeping bitter cold, gripping me with spiteful hold, remembering the dreams I sold in order for me to grow old. Whispers still plague the mind with memories best left behind. Hope, of course, has long resigned, leaving me emotionally blind. Those whispers lulled in somber tone seal my heart in proverbial stone. In cyclical misery I am shown, in the end I die alone. Seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid. Avert your eyes and let me fade. Away from the menial dissonance, away from heartfelt consequence, away from timeless penitence, away from blissful ignorance. The obscure stage has been set for the favored marionette. With this curse I cannot forget just how deep the abyss can get. Looming at the modest pall, adhering to the shadow's call, I walk down the blackened hall to greet the shame of my final fall. Seeping into blackened shade, the wicked pit of darkness made, my emptiness and feelings paid. Avert your eyes and let me fade.
Great read, Robert. Thank you very much for the sound pass. It is very much appreciated. And Wayne, why don't we start with you, please? Wayne?
Who did you ask?
Wayne.
I didn't say Wayne. Oh, I said, look, I didn't hear you say Wayne. I'm sorry. This is great rhyming, a wonderful wording. It's a person in a low spot in his life not seeing nothing but despair at the end of his life. His, the emotion is just an emotion of giving up, and it's just no use no more. It's great poem, great reading, and I enjoyed it a lot. There's a lot of good emotion in it.
Thank you, Wayne. And Jean, how about you?
I think this was an excellent piece. I think that it was just really, really well expressed. And I know he was truly inspired by your song, Bother. So, well done. Really well done. Great job, Robert, and thanks for sharing with us, as always. It's always awesome.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
I like the monotone rhyming in each, not the monotone, the mono rhyming in each stanza. It really is very impactful. He does such a brilliant job of allowing what he calls blackened shade to escape the emotions of life, the menial dissonance, the heartfelt consequence, the timeless penitence, blissful ignorance. All the things you have to deal with in life, he wants to leave that behind because there's not much left for him at this point. So he does ask, my emptiness and feelings paid over your eyes, let me fade, not look any longer at the me of perhaps little consequence. Let me just fade away. I don't have to deal with any of it anymore. Outstandingly atmospheric.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
I thought this was, first of all, a wonderful read. I like that it starts out with the whole idea of someone who's lost all hope, who's sold their dreams, and now they just want to, and then the whole idea of wanting to fade into the background. My emptiness and feelings paid, avert your eyes and let me fade. And I like the next stanza after that, it leads into the, with starts with away with every line, away from menial dissonance. I like the use of the phrase cyclical misery, as if it's a misery passed down from generation to generation. you know, just a wonderful emotive dark rite and very well done.
Nice comments, everybody. Thank you very much. I agree with a lot. I love the mantra rhyme in this. And it's had me looking at it a little bit differently. I go with the sort of the picture of Dorian Gray, especially with that sort of avert your eyes and let me fade. It's that note of not wanting to have seen the ugliness that comes with life when you kind of bend to the thought of giving in to certain things just because you want this, and how it affects you, and how it might draw forth the ugliness across that what you consider yourself in that moment. And like the Dorian Gray thought, it works very well on that level itself. Thank you, Robert. All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay, well, I've got one more audio, and then we're going to run down the list of who's here. So let me put this piece up by Frank, who had it for Casa. And let me play that out. Yeah.
I was once a little spry seed of innocence in your special garden. But I then blossom into the ripe and budding flower of today, infused by the morning showers of the midday spring of dreams, when you nurtured my delicate petals with your tender care. Every day you embraced me with the fondness of a mother's grace, taught me to dance amongst the playful dew and revel in the rain, to let the seasons accompany the days in the moonlight nights, never forgetting the fresh fragrance of your scent in the evening paprika. You comforted me in the darkness and watched me grow in the sunlight when I was all alone and too afraid to even let you know what I found, how much I really just needed to hear the words from you, "It's okay, I'm here for you." So fold your drowsing petals and go to sleep. Return to the special garden I have with such a sweet smile as I came anew to see amid roses and waxy in my jasmines, what I used to be before in the gleam of the twilight of my youth. With the colourful butterflies nigh, when you sheltered me with love. Now after all this time past, like the same mother, I have come to see you and touch the sibyls of your aging bloom. Madrecita, eres la cosa más hermosa en el jardín. Mother, you are the most beautiful thing in the garden. My jasmine flower. My beloved jasmine flower.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for the sound class. It is very much appreciated. And That was quite a different voice from you, Frank. Get some comments. Gene, you want to kick us off?
Sure. I think this was a great rite, Frank, and thank you so much. It's just Happy Mother's Day. Well, there you go. Sounds like a good reason. Definitely a beautiful rite. I love the title rite from the beginning. You know, jasmine flower, a lovely flower. It brings a wonderful thought to the mind. But definitely a great job, Frank, and I really enjoyed this one. It's nice to hear something just a little different, you know. It was all good, but it's just nice to hear something a little different. But very well put together and nicely recorded as well. So, nice work. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. And Laurent, how about you?
This is Dean Stutt. for the remarkable Mother's Day poem. It's skill exhibiting passion for a mother, not sexual passion, but passion of a loving child. It's really quite remarkable. There's an elegance and underlying understanding of how connected a mother can be to the child as the flower is connected to the garden. And he uses the metaphor very skillfully, very moving.
Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is just absolutely wonderful. I love that he pays tribute to his mother and the idea of how the grace and the love of a mother can help a child to flourish and to grow. I really thought this was beautiful all the way through, but especially that first stanza and the "you comforted me in the darkness and watched me grow in the sunlight when I was all alone and too afraid to even let you know what I felt." You know, the whole idea of a mother, even when she doesn't exactly know what's going on, she just knows that her child is afraid, her child is hurt, and she's there for them. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Wayne, how about you?
Yes, I heard some rooms in my garden say something similar to this. A flower can be so sentimental. You know, I need a flower to care so much for their mother like that. This flower sounds intelligent and grateful. It has great read, great write, and I like the flower. I like the flower's metaphors in this a whole lot, and I like the part about the mother. Good job.
Excellent. Thank you very much there, Wayne. Laurent was right about the passion in this, but he walks a little more delicate and tender path, and the soft voice that he used in this really made this stand out for what it was, which was a tribute to his mother, and I guess it's for Mother's Day? Yes. So, well done, Frank. There's a nice turn of from beginning and come about right back to now it's your turn to do a little bit of that caregiving. Excellent, Frank. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back up to you.
Okay, let me see now. I'm coming up to the top. I'm going to start with you, Rex, and work my way straight on down the list. So here we go, whenever you're ready. Whatever shows up. There we go.
Oh.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll say. Okay. Our shadows got lost running from themselves. Home never spoke in cockroach whispers, yet pine box walls creaked in night's moving dermis, where the sun sang not, its only regret, and a hound's howl caressed our cold dermis. We slept in rafters built for strutting cocks, rancid peals scratching out a torpid street, squealed delights in harlequin romance socks, peddling an overburdened cash cow fleet. Piss-filled stairwells ran in silent syringes, poking fun at open-shot cocaine bros. Even the rats abhorred our sinful binges, leaving us raisins and blessing those toes. We watched bedbugs carrying carpet bags and moving south to antebellum skies, where the termites respected little shags and partied in wingtip satin-lined lies. We lost Betsy last November to fire, spreading her ashes in summer's barrow. We trenched that wretched hollow where she did sire, off thoughts ideal to float upon our sorrow. 25 years gone, those tenement shells, we lurked in fear and compromised our souls. Shadows getting lost, running from themselves, a distance we couldn't cover without tolls. We buried the dread and lived with our dead, those ghost-haunted alleys refused by the elves. And we cheered the pain with those rains unshed, while shadows got lost, running from themselves. End poem.
Nice work. Pam, you want to start us off?
Yeah, well, first of all, a wonderful rhyming poem. Oh, my goodness. I really like how you bring us back in time to the you know, to where when life was difficult. I like that you mentioned the overburdened cash cow and the death of it. It's like the whole idea to me of people who decide that rather than depending on wealth, they're going to get out there and, you know, have adventures and explore the world, but you know, live almost like the whole idea of living off of the land, depending on themselves. You know, and we watched bedbugs carrying carpet bags and moving south to antebellum skies where the termites respected little shags and parted and wing-tipped satin-lined lies. There's a wonderful kind of, first of all, I like the use of all the different insects and the play with words and the mention of the wing-tipped satin-lined lies. It's to me that whole idea of how the performances put on in order to make people believe the lies. You know, it's really just a strong right all the way through, powerful imagery and metaphors. And I really like this one, Rex. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Wayne, how about you?
I said this poem is well written, has an excellent rhyme and a great storyline, and it's written in the spirit of Shakespeare to me. It has the 10 syllables per line, it looks like, and ABAB rhyme scheme. It's a great read of a special poem. You did a great job with this poem. It's a great job.
Thank you very much.
And Laurent, how about you?
Well, kudos to you, Rex. You know, you paint a picture of uncomfortable images. Pine box walls creak to night's moving dermis. It speaks of people dying in place in a kind of world where you lived almost hand to mouth, sleeping in rafters built for strutting cocks, you know, sleeping in the rafters of barns, living how you can. Rancid heels scratching out a torpid street, squeal delights in a harlequin low man's socks. These are folks who work with animals, who work with cows, I assume, bulls, etc. The sinful goodness that the rats abhorred, I thought was very skillful. And there is no way to move from one place to another, you know, despite moving south to antebellum skies, where the termites perhaps are a little more respectful of you. You life still continues. You lost Betsy last November to fire, spreading her ashes neath Summer's barrow. I would assume Betsy is a cow, and perhaps it's all that family had. We trenched that wretched hollow where she did sire. All thought ideals that flowed upon sorrow, you know, her giving birth would certainly be a positive thing and have that value to their lives. But, you know, 25 years gone, these tenement shelves, we lurked in fear and compromised our souls. You can't escape who you are. You can't escape sometimes the life that you lead. And sometimes all we run away from of the shadows we create ourselves. It's a complex intermingling of ideas and imagery open to conjecture by the reader, but really you maintained a good tight leash on your message all the way through this. I enjoyed it a great deal, my friend.
Thank you very much, Laurent. Nice takedown of thought. I like it. All right, Gene, we're coming back to you. Where do you want to go next?
Because I said this was an excellent piece, Rex, and that's what I said when I heard it the first time. And, yeah, and I want to thank you for calling in and sharing it with us all, because that's what I wrote on there, and so I had a laugh.
I can't do that. He's 4 years old.
But no, it's a great piece, and I assume that the prompt is I'll sleep in this place with the lonely crowd, and the shadows run from themselves. So it was an excellent piece. you know, that's what I said before. So, I mean, I just wanted to, you know, it's just a good piece. It's a good solid piece, actually. That's the best way. So, thanks.
Thank you, everybody. Great comment.
Okay, let me see now. Pam, I have you up next. So whenever you are ready.
All right. This is The Kiss of a Headlight, and it goes like this. Everything is sticky blazes, reeking of industrial production and pennies in jars. Overworked men are spreading black tar while the city pretends cracks do not exist. Women are not crying. Maybe tomorrow tears will flow. Tonight they are too busy feeding dreams to children. Wannabes sing show tunes to the graffiti walls, feathered boas and the taste of wax on puckered lips. Beyond the dusk, we are walking a karma of railroad tracks leading to the kiss of a headlight, lost in canyons where we become the smoke, high on the journey, crumbling in the tin can fire. End poem.
Wow.
Great read, man. Thank you very much. And Gene, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, because I wasn't ready. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, I think who loved this piece? I think it was pretty well done. And it was a great write for the prompt from Leah Sunday. It was Leah Sunday, right? Yes. Wasn't it? Yes. I wasn't there. I missed it. Sorry. but I think that it really was a good reflection of the prompt. Pretty clever. The kiss of a headlight, that had me going when I first heard the title. Then when he got down here near Sam, beyond the dust, you're walking the karma of railroad tracks, leading to the kiss of a headlight. All right. Ding, 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 ding. You went off in my brain, and I went, yeah. Excellent. Excellent job, Pam. Really well done. Nice work.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dean. And, Laurent, how about you?
I came to the same epiphany that Gene came to regarding the kiss of a headlight. That was a nice little bit, Pam. Your description of life in a city at the edges, the ragged edges, the overworked men spreading black tar while the city pretends cracks do not exist, and the metaphor of the cracks for the sundering of a society which chooses not to admit to them, and women who are too busy to pause to cry, raising children, feeding them dreams, sometimes the most important things you can possibly do. The imagery of that tin can fire is so well done, you know, the on-the-road type of feel where you might have a couple of hobos. And I just say hobos, not mendicants, anybody else, but real hobos who often built that little tin can fire and had a little bit of soup at night. It's very, very well crafted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And Wayne, how about you?
Yeah, I like this poem. It said, talking about the plight of mothers and not having no time left and There's no room for the cracks in a mother's life. Men don't have much better. They have a struggle in their life about every day. This is a poem about struggling. Everyone has a struggle in their life to have to overcome, and we're all hard at it. And pretty great job with this poem.
Thank you, Wayne. All right, that leading to the kiss of a headlight has me thinking of a deer moment, frozen, and then everything's black once more. And that thought with the overworked men spreading black tar while the pretend cracks do not exist. There's that notion of tasting over that which is already broken and not really doing anything about it. And the women not crying, the kids, no dreams, the wannabes, is society, the mix of it, kind of swept in a very large city. Nothing is working anymore, and everything is on its way to that large 50-gallon drum that people are using to heat themselves because that's the only thing they got left.
thank you, Rex, and thank you for the inspiration.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right. All right, Jean, let's cover the back.
Okay, and Laurent, I have you up next. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. This is called I Am Dumb to It. I saw him die in war. A battle nightmare, flinging hard charts. He left me a midair smile, melting ice that had fallen between us. A loving, ready earth parted to receive him, while my silence suffered in its pain. Blush of blood on lips, words held prisoner against my straining tongue. Screaming inside me, voiceless thunder deafening. I saw him die in war, and I am dumbed. And Paul.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, wow. This one is very powerful. It hits hard. He left me in a midair smile, melting ice that had fallen between us. I feel like the mention of the melting ice is that idea of watching somebody who is on the other side die. A loving, ready earth parted to receive him while my silence suffered in its pain. I like that you use the phrase for the title, I Am Dumb to It. It's that whole idea of the silence to suffering in the moment of a soldier being in battle and watching people die around them. But also because you end that way, I saw him die in war and I am dumb to it. It's that idea that that soldier who goes on to go home, oftentimes doesn't want to talk about all the horrific things that they have seen, or they can't talk about it because, it just hurts too much to do so. So just absolutely brilliant and very well done, Lauren.
Thank you,
Pam. And Wayne, how about you?
This is a great poem as far as what it expresses the damage a war can do to somebody. I like the expression, I am dumb to it. War in war time, the warriors lose their ability to express themselves when the war is over, and they just rather just be walk around and be dumb to what happens to them. This is a great poem to express it perfectly. Great job there, Frank. I like this a lot.
Thank you, Wayne.
And Jean, how about you?
I think this was a wonderful write, Ron. Just really, really well done. I mean, it's almost a brevity, I think. To me, it's a little longer, but it's basically a brevity, especially for you. Usually your poems are a little denser than this, and I think that it actually is good in this case. I think that your images were well done, and the thoughts in it were just really well conveyed. It was a moving piece, so great job.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great comments, everybody. All right, this does work well as a literal piece, but I'm going to go with the metaphor angle. I saw him die in war, a battle nightmare flinging hard shards. I think the die here kind of references the person being broke, having seen too much, because you offer that thought, I am dumb to it. There is that notion in war, you actually have to be dumb and numb to the surroundings, the explosions, the bullets, the death, and everything else. Otherwise, you go mad. I think that opening level kind of hits on that sort of something broke within this guy. And that midair smile, a melting ice had fallen between us. The ice that was between us might have been a bad company or the fact that something went on between you. Now, the third one, you hit on the sort of him resting, being put to earth. So he's, both of you come home, but now he's being laid to rest. So something else has gone on and happened. maybe his brokenness levied something that got him to this point. The blush and red lips against the stringy tongue, there is that want and need to talk, but you know, you don't. Because you are still dumb to that and to offer up that kind of in-depth, revelatory thought and voice might actually be more than the pain willing to suffer past the thought that he's dead now and you can't actually maybe speak to him again or say sorry or something along those lines.
That was nice.
Okay. Are you sending it back to me, Rex?
Absolutely.
Okay, all of a sudden I got quiet. I got confused. Doesn't take much for
me
to get
confused. Yeah, I couldn't hear anything.
And because everybody shut up. Everybody got quiet. Okay. Wayne, I'm putting your piece up now, so let me hit the button.
All righty. This is a quote. I use a quote and a picture and a lot of words.
This is called Death and Drought Dance. Oh, they say she died one winter. Think there came a killing frost. She'd become much thistle thinner. Oh, how much the chips of barren land cost. Blackbirds shout for rain waters to flood fields where clover, dandelion, and dill were yields. Where rattle, raccoon, bullfrogs brood dotted patches, while sparrow, peacock, and bluebird eggs hatches. Produce penny pickles and pimento peppers before drought. Plant a perfumed paprika and grew kite cabbage for kraut. Serve farmers pork hot dogs with cranberry tea for drinking. Sipped strawberry sangria wine at station store while thinking. No bouquets of blooming blossoms surround with chestnut cracked canopy licking ground. And wind weeps as walrus wheat wither. Sycamore, cedar, and redwood hath hither and thither. Goldenrod sunbeams pound home and hill. Purple striped earthworms and magnolia moss did kill. Ebony gray container clouds carry honeydew hope. Floating plump fountains sprinkles on serrated soil slope. In.
Great read, Wayne. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. That was most enjoyable. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, this is a wonderful write. Great use of alliteration and rhyme. To me, the main theme is the whole idea of the importance of the land and what happens when it dies. I really liked the produce penny pickles and pimento peppers before drought, planted perfume paprika, grew kite cabbage for kraut. You know, there's so much to me on the idea, like, you just think of those, like, German farmers who, like, moved to the United States and was trying to farm a new land. I also really liked the mention of the walrus, and wind weeps as walrus wheat withers. It has a very Alice in Wonderland type feel in that part. There's something almost magical in the imagery, and yet there's that whole representation of how the farmer has to keep trying over and over again because there's so much that going on against them. And so right. Powerful light and very well done.
Well, quick comment.
Nice, Pam. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Oh, they say she died one winter when there came a killing frost. She had become much thinner. Oh, how much the chips of barren land cost. It's such a gorgeous opening to your poem, Wayne. And I love your inventive iteration. But the message of the land is the thing so well expressed. I really love the level you brought your poetry to over the years, my friend.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you. Enjoy this.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
I think it was a great piece, Wayne. I think it was a great use of the word bank. It looked like a pretty big word bank, too. So,
yeah.
Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it says 113 total words and 50 of the words from us.
Wayne used 83 of them.
He said usually 10 of them, so he used all of them. So.
I like how you incorporated the prompt. Oh, they say she died one winter when there came a killing frost. You know, how you incorporated that into your first two lines of the poem. Yeah. Pretty interesting. Nice way to kick it off, I would say. So, nice job.
Thank you very much. Thank all of you.
Thank you, Gene. I'll tell you what, I love word banks, Wayne, but damn. You did kick in high gear using all these words to, and you didn't. Only gave 5 stanzas. So, Jesus bloody hell, that's
take a puzzle.
50 words furnished. 50 of the words furnished. So you had to drop at least 10 words in each stanza to make this work for you, and you did. So,
yeah.
Bloody hell. And
I
too thought that using that quote as your opening end up was a nice touch, especially when you dropped it. She had become much thistle thinner. Oh, how much the chips of barren land cost. That was a nice ending rhyme there to that opening stanza itself. And everything else kind of peels back the thought to that picture itself and offers up the desolation and what everybody and everything feels in the moment, whether it's the farm or the birds or even the flowers themselves, just searching for those little tidbits of rainwater to actually feed that barren earth once more.
That's
nicely
it.
Nicely done.
Great comment. Great comment. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, Gene. I dare say we got at least time for one more.
I think you're probably correct. Let me just take a peek and see what I have floating around here. Oh, I got plenty of everything going around here. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let me put up S sharp. The Betty is hanging out all night. And here we go. Okay, and here's the audio.
The revolution. Jane says she thinks you outshine the sun, but you use it to insult the flowers instead. You color them all wrong. The cherry blossoms like minutemen are up and ready to arm. She says you demean the leaves on the hickory trees too, that fall like soldiers into the trenches. Another generation recycled into the earth. A turncoat walk away from the buck and ball of the revolution's backwoods, where the battle for independence will be won or lost. Cut and run, take the oxygen with you. Turn your back on the beasts and the bees. The wind whispers that you carry spite like pollen, polluting the air with your interests. Even the clouds do not want to be seen with you. Rise alone like the sun in the clear blue skies. But know the revolution has begun.
Thank you very much for the time, Father Scott. We really appreciate having you send those in. And Pam, why don't we stick with you?
Yeah, this has just wonderful thought-provoking imagery and metaphors. I like how he consistently brings up the idea of the revolution and, you know, another generation that on the hickory trees, too, that fall like soldiers into the trenches, another generation recycled into the earth, a turncoat walk away from the buck and ball of the revolution's backwoods where the battle for independence will be won or lost, cut and run. You know, I really like that, the whole idea of, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to stand up and fight? Or are you going to cut your losses and run? Turn your back on the beasts and the bees. I think that's an especially important line in the whole idea of how too often people have turned their back on what they consider to be small and insignificant, and yet we're so important to creation. So just a really wonderful write and very well done.
Well, thank you very much. And Laurent, how about you?
This individual described by Jane as someone who outshines the sun reveals a person who was probably pretty remarkable and may have even believed in the earth and how to treat it, but chose to use his skills in other directions, turning his back on the earth, demeaning the leaves, which do fall every year. You know, take the oxygen with you. Turn your back on the beasts and the bees. The wind whispers that you carry spite like pollen. He makes it all ugly, and he has completely gone on to the other side. And now we see him as one of the equals as opposed to one of someone who can outshine the sun. Beautifully done.
Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Wayne, how about you?
Hey, great metaphor, Ness. Invasion of the cherry blossoms, bringing their scent and pushing their influence and pulling the air, you know, with their own slot. And there's nothing what kind of person do but run. They come back whenever the overwhelming display of odds is better for us. You know, the cherry blossom, when it loses like it's snowing, can't even see through it. And so this is a The cherry blossoms are invading, and all you can do is wait till it's over because their influence is too strong. Great job. Great metaphor.
Excellent. Thank you, Wayne. All right, Jean, how about you?
Uh-oh. Hang on. I rolled the side. I said it was a wonderful piece by SS. Great imagery, and I said it was very well written. So definitely a great job, and thank you for sharing with us as always. Always, always, always.
Absolutely. I thought we'd done all the SoundClouds. When you put this up, I was going to start reading it. And then I heard, oh, it's got a SoundCloud. Kind of shocked me there. There's kind of notice of thought, the revolution being maybe the earth offering up itself as a backdraw, because she does have some very interesting ways of biting back when you least expect it. All right, it's thank you, Scott. All right, Jean, we're coming to you for the close.
Okay, well, it's that time again. Hang out with the After Midnight session, hang out with the Fraziana and Babbler on Park Center, Park Saint. And tomorrow night we have, I think it's, is it Gray? I think it's Gray Eyes, isn't it, Pam?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So tomorrow night we have Bay Company with Gray Eyes Smith. And Sunday, it'll be Rex and Pam and I on Rhythm and Rhyme. And that sums up the weekend. Thank everyone who called in tonight and participated in this show. And thank you for everyone who shared poetry with us. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Laurent. Thanks, Rex, as always, for co-hosting with me. Pam, thanks for hanging out with us all night. It was fun. Thanks for keeping me straight on the SoundCloud. I hope I can get And have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, gang.
Night.
Nice.